2 right now. And so it's important that the congressional delegation hears that it's important to Oregonians to have that managed for the public good, for water.
Okay, we got to run, Brenna. Thank you so much to Brenna Bell, you just heard, to Courtney Ray and Russ Plager, all from BARC. Thank you all for listening, and see you next week.
See you in the forest.
Now thank you, KBOO.
We take a stand to see the native forests live forever. And for the thousand-year-old fir, is this the final hour? And for the redwood and the cedar, will they feel the chainsaw's power? And in just 20 years, will our children read in books about the ancient...
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. At 9, we celebrate Fisher Poets with Mo Boustern and Steve Schoonmaker, Fisher Poets, and Perry Broderick, the son of one of the founders of the Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features excerpts from documentary Capitalism. And at 11, on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter asks a panel of guests from local climate groups, what does it take to motivate us to bridge the gap between knowing and acting? And how do we participate in restructuring our world? Thank you, KBOO members, for your continuing support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And now we are going to celebrate the Fisher Poets.
Scales in my hair, slime on my clothes, smell of fish follows wherever I go. My friends told me as how to get rich quick. All I'm getting so far is seasick. Here I am out on the herring grounds, searching for silver to put my net around. The tide is falling, my skiff's aground. There's too much up and down, up and down. You ask me would I trade for a short job where I got paid. No way, Jose, I'll take scales in my hair, slime on my clothes, smell of fish follows wherever I go. My friends told me as how to get rich quick. All I'm getting so far is seasick. Here I am out on Queen Charlotte Sound. The swell is glassy, we're surfing down. There's porpoises playing in the bow. They're jumping all around, all around. You ask me would I trade for a short job where I got paid. No way, Jose, I'll take scales in my hair, slime on my clothes, smell of fish follows wherever I goes. My friends told me as how to get rich quick. All I'm getting so far is seasick. All I'm getting so far is seasick.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. We just heard the Stack Sisters, and the song was Seasick. And today we have something a little different for Political Perspectives. We are going to talk about Fisher Poets. The annual Fisher Poets Gathering is this weekend in Astoria. And for Portlanders who can't get to the coast, seven Fisher Poets from Alaska, Arkansas, and Washington, as well as local poets Laura Messersmith-Glavin and Mo Baustern, are staging a night of storytelling, poetry, and song tonight at Salvage Works in Kenton at 6:30 p.m. And today we'll get a preview of that event as we speak with Fisher poet Mo Baustern, Alaskan Fisher poet Steve Schoonmaker, and Perry Broderick, who grew up fishing and attending the gathering in Astoria. Mo Baustern is the editor of Extra Tough, a zine that chronicles the experiences and adventures of commercial fisher folk in Alaska and beyond. She performs annually at the Astoria Oregon Fisher Poets Gathering. Mo Baustern, welcome. Thanks for coming in and being part of this.
Thanks so much, Kathleen. It's really great to be here.
Steve Schoonmaker is an Alaskan fisher poet who will be performing tonight at Salvage Works. Is that right, Steve?
Yes. I'm glad to be part of that.
Great. Thanks for coming in, too. And it's good to have you from so far away.
It's good to be from so far away. It's good to get out of there for a while this time of year.
Good. And Perry Broderick, as I said, is the son of John Broderick, one of the founders of the Fisher Poets Festival, and Doreen Broderick, who has been a huge behind-the-scenes force in the gathering. Perry Broderick has fished his entire life and now works the off-season for Ocean Outcomes in Portland. Welcome, Perry.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming in. So I thought we'd start by just getting to know each of you a little bit more and how you relate to the whole Fisher Poet gathering and the whole issue of being a Fisher Poet. Mo, you are a Fisher Poet, editor, singer, storyteller. I know you have a very interesting biography. Tell us a little bit about how you became a Fisher Poet.
Oh, that's a good one. Most people usually just ask how I got into fishing.
Oh.
So, 1997, I was up in Kodiak, and I had a copy of my zine, Extra Tough, which was the very first issue. This is actually the 20th anniversary of the Extra Tough birth of my little zine. And we were on strike. Or as we say in fishing, because we're all independent contractors, everybody colloquially calls it a strike, but you have to say it's a stand down. So we were all refusing to fish and organizing locally in town. And I was spray painting some signs for us to have on the boat and on the boats to show our support for the organization. And a reporter came up to me from the Alaska Fisherman's Journal and started talking to me. And his name was John Van Amerongen. And I just immediately started harassing him and making fun of him. And he was asking me questions and I just kept challenging him to. I just harassed him. I was like, why don't you find out? You're the reporter. It was a long time ago. And then I gave him my zine, and we became friends, and he ended up playing at the strike picnic in the band. And that fall, I got an email from Perry's dad, John Broderick, who had asked John Van Amerongen, hey, do you know anybody that writes poetry or does anything creative with fishing? We're going to have this little gathering, I think. And John forwarded he sent my zine along to the other John. And that's how I got involved. And I showed up in Astoria. I had $5. I was so broke. It was like my second or first winter in Portland. And Portland, I had come from Chicago, and I loved Portland because it was so easy to live here, except there was no work. So I got a ride out to the coast. I basically hitchhiked out there. I had my bike so that I could ride back in February because I didn't have a ride home. And nobody knew me, and they were all like, I remember I was wandering around town, and I went to one of the venues, and I see some people, and I was like, Fisher Poets? And I see John Broderick, and Julie Brown and her husband Bob Brown, and they all turned around, and I was like, I'm Mo Bastard, and they're like, we've been waiting to meet you. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, Mo Bastard, and you, it's such a perfect name for fishing. And I just looked at them and I said, I made it up. I just, and they were like, oh, well, welcome. And then Julie invited me to come to one of the workshops that she was, and I brought my zine and ended up going home with a little bit of money. Everybody paid me way more for my zine than I was asking for the dollar that I asked them. And just, it was an amazing experience to encounter everybody, to just be like, when you're fishing and you're out there and you're writing poems or you're singing songs so you don't go crazy, and you just sort of secretly hide it, you know, or you say like, hey, I wrote a poem, and people are like, why'd you write a poem? Why don't you just get to work, you know? And so to come to this gathering and be like, oh, there's, I'm not the only one, and have people be up on stage, and it was so great. Mm-hmm. It was so great. And that first year, I remember everybody got up there and they were telling these stories, because when you first start writing about events in your life, I think the thing you pick is like, that time we almost died. And so then you're up there and everybody's like telling that story, but they were more frightened of reading in front of other people. And you could see their knuckles were all white up there on the podium, and it was sweet. Mm. And then it's the thing I also loved about it. It's like I've been, you know, writing poems and stories since I was about 8. And this particular gathering is one of the only places, it is kind of the only place I've ever been where people get off the stage and they want to talk about how great everybody else was. And it's not so much about like, hey, did I do okay? Everybody's just lifting each other up and so appreciative of getting to see the reflection of our lives, you know, reflected back to us. Mm-hmm. Because you don't see that on television. And you, I mean, The Deadliest Catch is out there, but that is not.
It's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, thing. So that's a long answer to a short question. That's what you get for inviting the fishing poets.
Steve Schoonmaker, you, I don't know as much about your background as I do about Mo's, but you're a longtime fisherman, I'm thinking. And then how did the poetry come into the mix?
I started in Kodiak in the 80s on crab boat, and I was seining and longlining and gill netting and set netting. And over the years, I ended up in Cordova, and I started writing poems on my own a little bit. I didn't really share them with people. I don't know. I just kind of started doing it. And I saw in Pacific Fishing Magazine one time, there was an article about fisher poets, Dave Densmore and all that stuff. I thought, wow, man, that sounds like something I could do, you know? Well, I was in Cordova in the springtime. They had a fisher poets gathering there, and so I went up there. I could make a long story out of this. My engine blew that weekend. I was all kinds of problems at the beginning of the season, and I wasn't going to go, and none of my buddies were going to go. And they said, well, go down there and get on the mic, ask around, and get an engine, get something going. So I thought, all right. So I went down there, and about 11 o'clock at night, they finally got me up there, and I'd memorized these poems. And so I did them, and they loved it. The next winter, I got an email from John Broderick saying, hey, we heard you got some poems. Why don't you send us some? And think about coming down. I thought, wow. Well, I wasn't on the internet very much. I was at a friend of mine's house. He was checking his email, and he goes, you want to check your email? I go, I don't care. He goes, let's just check it. And we looked in there, and he goes, whoa, look at that. And I said, man, I don't know. He said, you got to go. I said, well, I don't know. I'm kind of broke, and that's kind of a big time. I don't know. He goes, no, he bought me a ticket and sent me down there. Mm-hmm. And another friend of mine picked me up, my cousin's wife. She picked me up in Seattle, drove me all the way down here. Wow. And started me on it. And so I showed up with like 3 or 4 memorized poems, and man, I fit right in. I couldn't believe it. So 9 years now, this will be my ninth time. Mm-hmm. Wow. So give me something to write for, you know. Before I was kind of, you know, I write stuff besides fishing poetry, but mostly fishing stuff now, because this kind of spurred me on. And then coming to this event, too, being around birds of a feather.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Right. And Perry, Broderick, you are not a Fisher poet, is that right?
That's correct. I like to set that expectation.
But you are the son of a Fisher poet who was one of the founders of the festival. So, and your mother, Doreen Broderick, was also quite involved. So talk a little bit about what it was like. How old were you when it started?
Yeah, I at one point said I wasn't a fisherman either, and now I'm on my 15th or 16th summer up in Bristol Bay, so I've managed to become a salty dog before the age of 30, so I might be a fisher poet before things end. It's one thing I really like about the Fisher Poets Gathering, though, is the line between performer and someone who's kind of invested and involved in the gathering is pretty blurred. You know, I go out every year. I love the event. I go out with my family and friends, and we volunteer. We do outreach here in Portland. I remember going up with my dad 15, 20 years ago, not 20 years ago, because that would have been too long, but 15 years ago, and putting up the signs around Astoria when it was still a smaller event. So it's been pretty well ingrained in my life growing up, and it's something I almost take for granted, but I really look forward to it every year.
Mm-hmm. And your parents are still involved?
Oh, yeah, certainly. They are some of the driving force behind the event. So, we host a lot of people at our house in Cannon Beach, throw a big party after the event to celebrate another successful year. And I think my mom probably works harder than most anybody I know.
And we're going to talk later probably about your current job in the off-season, which involves working for Ocean Outcomes here in Portland, and some of the issues that come up around fishing that we want to get to as we go along in this program. But one thing might be good now is to hear some poetry. We have some that's recorded, and we have some that Mo and Steve are going to do live. So let's go first to Steve. You want to start with, I know you have some new
Yeah, sure. I got this new one I wrote a few weeks ago for this event. And, I'll say this. We sometimes see our involvement in the world as individuals or small groups, regional. But really, it's a small planet. And we've been here a long time, and we've found ways to adapt and adapt the environment and stuff. And it's adapting around us, too. So that's my little lead-in. Mm. It's called All in a Row. If you ask what it was, or we tied in a row, what it was about fishing, I might say, I don't know. Could be the ocean or the mountains and running my own show with my predator instincts. Is a symptom of the whole, where the kind's ancient soul, hunter-gatherers still go, where the kind of the mind, we tie all in a row. If you ask what it was while we tied in a row, what it was about fishing, I might say, well, we're just floating boats, and the boats float the show. Love it or leave it, as maintenance goes, a boat's a machine, stem, stern, or foe, and machines say what isn't. And machines say what's so. Now confined to these times, hunter-gatherers go, with the kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Where the purposeless wild remains the sea's themes, still tied to the holds of the fishermen's dreams, still tied to more loads from those fish of the sea, from the watershed's runoffs, in the sea's salinities, in the mix of the whole unconcerned anarchy. It's itself for itself in the upwelling's feed, for the birds and their prey, for the whole ocean's needs. Where addictions are costly and hard to let go, so caught in the flow, from exhausted machines, hunter-gatherers go, with the kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Attached, like sea lice, to black stack smoke rise, attached to the skies, to sea circulations with a still rolling dice, to acidification in our boats running nice, to procrastination, whatever the price. With a kind's ancient soul, hunter-gatherers will go, with a kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Oh, and it ties so metaphoric. As those lines at the dock. As sea circulations through everyday thoughts. As purpose and order strain man's feeble knots. That chafe at the binds where unconscious knows not. That inside is outside. It's just tied to the dock. And outside is inside as fish chowder stock. Self nourishes self as a symptom of the whole. With a kind's ancient soul, hunter-gatherers go. With a kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Oh, and it ties to the culture. Shirt out on those docks, as generations of families take the same wooden walks. By their kind, so aligned with the boats that they've got. With the bends of their wills, with the bends of their knots. As a symptom of the whole, catching fish from the sea. With the strains of a chase of an ancient kind's breed. Oh, it rolls metaphoric in the ways of these themes. And the up and down seasons in those worn out machines. Under skies unconcerned of our purposeful deeds. We're all as one function and spontaneously. As one as another, so all is at risk. From fishing boat captain to caught and sold fish. With a pull with the forces resist bound to persist. And purpose is just purpose. But if purpose insists, with a kind's ancient soul, hunter-gatherers go, with the kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Oh, and it ties to those risks, and a summer spent gone, and the stress of far families and marriage gone wrong, and dogs just wait to their boat on our show, with the kind of the mind, to tie all in a row. Oh, yeah, and the risks run the docks like that dog off its leash. And it runs through the homes of each fishing fleet. And it runs through the bars by the drunks at their seats. By their stories retold of their lives' common themes. By the jaded old sea dogs in youthful new dreams. Where it howls and it whines for new opportunities. As its wagging tails heads tethered straight to the sea. As a symptom of the whole. With a kind's ancient soul. Hunter-gatherers go. With a kind of the mind to tie all in a row. In that hearing loss numb of machinery's hulls, above harbor-scummed water lines, below harbor-bound gulls, the wild ocean's web strands, scientifically exposed, much more is now known, and the obvious shown, strands tied to those docks where the tenders unload. With high-tech awareness and a role in the show, where purpose and order versus actual control in the actual purposeless of the actual whole, where the ways of the ancients meet addictions of time, where boats can untie but stay tied in a bind, as a symptom of the whole, as time's burning up with an ancient kind soul, hunter-gatherers still go, with the kind of the mind to tie all in a row. So if you ask what it was while we tied in a row, I'd say it's the purpose and the order that the sea doesn't know. It's the safety and the reason from the flow of the whole. But afloat in what flows with such purposelessness. It's itself for itself, if destructive it is. And addictions remain if some purpose persists. Where survival's extinction is no concern to the whole. If too modern in purpose or too ancient in soul, it's itself for itself. And hunter-gatherers will go with the kind of the mind to tie all in a row.
Thank you for that.
Hey, Steve's not looking at a paper.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That just all came right out of Steve.
Yeah.
You can hear the that dark cabin in Kasilov.
Yeah, yeah. You got to do it 100 times. Oh, no. That's how you do it.
Yeah, and you just wrote that one recently? Or
2 weeks ago.
Wow.
I had to come up with something new.
Yeah. Are you going to do it tonight at Salvage Works?
Sure. Yeah.
And you said earlier that John Trudell was an influence on you, and same kind of everything's part of the same whole.
Concert. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I more so now, particularly this winter. I got cooped up in my place there. I live out in the woods, off the grid, and. I made a recording, this thing called GarageBand. People might hear about, you can record yourself and lay down tracks. Anyway, so I started making myself into a band, so to speak. I played guitar and mandolin and harmonica, the various things on it, and I put it together like that, and I started doing some poems that I hadn't really shared before. Fisher poet, they weren't Fisher poet poems. There were a lot of poems that didn't rhyme. I had a hard time memorizing them, but they're societal and important ones to me. So I dug them out, and I kind of fell into something that I really didn't realize. And when I listened back to it, I thought, wow, that I can see the influence now. And then that's really kind of direction I kind of want to take it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the open spoken word, but the beat in the band, man, you can put some power to that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, that's where that come from. And then when I heard he died this winter, it really kind of struck me, you know, it's like, man. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. an influence.
Mm-hmm. And just to let people know again, that was Steve Schoonmaker. And he is an Alaskan Fisher poet, and he will be performing tonight at Salvage Works at 6:30. And one of the organizers and also participants in the event is Mo Baustern. And Mo, I think you have something ready, and I want to also give Judy, our engineer, a heads up that we are going to later be listening to the John Broderick Poetry in Motion poem that Perry's father did, and we have recorded. So just giving her a heads up on that. But right now we'll go to Mo. And Mo, what do you want to share?
I have a poem here. I wrote it a few years ago. It's called I Give Up, a poem of surrender and gratitude for John Rogers. My experience is as a deckhand. There's getting to be a few more deckhands at the Fisher Poets, but it's a lot of skippers, you know, it's a lot of guys who run their own boats, and deckhands show up, and for 4 months a year, 6 months a year, 2 months a year, whatever, our lives are completely turned inside out, and then we go back, and like you talked about with Perry, we have an off season that's not present, and the only place that the whole is contained is within us and within our poetry and our writing. You know, when I showed up in Kodiak, people didn't want to hear, but I used to come from Chicago to go fishing in Kodiak and live the winters in Chicago and fish all summer in Kodiak. And I was the only, you know, I was just the only person there that had really ever, you know, was part of Chicago. And then I'd go back to Chicago and people would be like, Alaska, you know, what's. And so this poem I like because it, well, it's a tribute to a dear friend of mine, but it's also kind of spans that experience of wandering between those two poles of the wilderness and the heart of the urban experience. So again, it's called I Give Up, a poem of surrender and gratitude for John Rogers. I had a friend, didn't we all, who died of what we used to call AIDS. Remember that? Full-blown AIDS. He was an artist, weren't we all? During his last winter, I went to his apartment before Christmas, helped construct what he called crap to sell at the holiday fairs. I was 20-something, young for my age. I quailed in the company of his agony, shrugged off his gratitude, painted little homo angels with my head down, uncharacteristically monosyllabic. After an hour or so, he limped to the couch, laid down his cane, saying it was time to give himself up to the cosmos. He tried to do it every day. It's really hard, he said, on his back, eyes closed, arms out, like the wooden homo angels I was painting. This was Chicago in the 90s. We scorned Jesus Christ and horoscopes. We believed in winter and in dancing, balanced one against the other. Delight, moany love, de la soul. We stayed alive by not dying. Almost 20 years later, I am in an open boat in Alaska, picking salmon from nets 2 or 3 times a day. The nets stay put, we go back and forth. It's easier to think about the cosmos up here. A humpback pulls in one day, puts on a show. Hear me say that, puts on a show. How fishermen speak, downplaying everything, as if time doesn't stop when the great ones rear up. The humpback rises, impossible vertical levitation. The displaced ocean pours off its body, a waterfall from its open mouth. I hear the whale breathing from 50 feet away. The air shimmers, sunlight skips on gray skin, my sudden tears, the way I am holding my breath. I have fished now 2 decades on and off, my boss twice that. The greenhorn is the first to speak. Wow, he says, shattering the sanctity. I've never seen that before. My boss and I exhale. Me neither, we say in turn. Me neither. As the water erases the evidence of the cosmos. The whale comes even closer after we leave, tears through two of our three nets, unzips them. Lead line sinks to the bottom. Cork line and remaining web flutter on the surface, where they snare a passing flock of murrelets, tiny swimming birds. They struggled, many of them still alive as we approach hours later in the skiff, dismayed, a sinking gut, yet the beauty of the morning, the whale, dances still in our mind. We concentrated on the live birds, worked silently, our fingers clumsy, handling fragile feet, wings, legs, wrapped in monofilament, our monofilament. Hunched over, gloves off, we commit the sin of cutting the meshes to free the birds. We flip them on their backs. It's easier to see the clear web against the white breast feathers and keeps them from drowning. They strike us with their black beaks, over and over, biting us. It's more startling than painful. I'm sorry, I say, as the birds gasp and stab. I save one, set it in the sea, reach for another. It's oddly like picking fish. From beyond the heaving handful, I catch glimpses of the survivors paddling away on the tide. Their wing beats on the water sound like applause, like forgiveness. The others we bury in the garden. Sometimes in my life, I get caught on the surface between above and below. I think of my friend, long dead, and I stretch out on the sofa, give myself up to the cosmos. The murrelets come to mind, a tiny bird on its back strikes at huge hands that only want to help. Relax, let go, I will be freed. From the couch, 20 years ago, I hear my friend's exhausted voice. It's really hard.
Thank you.
Yes, that's from an anthology called Collective Brightness, edited by a guy named Kevin Simmons, who lives in San Francisco. I've never met him, but he contacted me for this anthology of LGBTIQ poets on faith, religion, and spirituality. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, of course, the whales made it in, you know?
Yeah. And you've done that. Have you performed that? Or?
I have. I have performed that. Yep. It's on. I have a CD with that on it. It's, I can't remember. I must have wrote it in 2010 or so. It's a few years old now.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of have turned more to storytelling, I have to say. You know, it's... The thing about fishing, I got in a car accident. I got in a couple car accidents, actually, a few years apart, and it sort of beached me for a while now. And it's the thing I like about going fishing, among other, you know, you're just stuck out there, and you're cut off, and you can't check your phone every 2 minutes, and you don't have, you've already paid your rent, or you don't live anywhere, so you're on the boat, and... or on the beach, wherever you're fishing, and you just can really, you know, sink into your environment and sort of try and make things okay with yourself. And you have time to really sort out what's going on inside your head and connect it to what's going on around you. And I get it when I would be fishing or get out there a couple months in, and you just think about everything that you miss, but there's a sweetness to it because you're also... when you go back to Chicago, then you miss all that other stuff. And it's hard to find that place when you're in the rat race here in Portland. You know, I've been beach for a few years now, and it's just like, I can't believe the things I think about, you know, like parking spots and stuff like that. You know, you just want to.
Right. Well, it's one of my questions is, what is it about fishing and poetry? Just trying to think of any other professions where there would be gatherings of the people that do that job reading their poetry about that job. It seems a pretty unique kind of combination. Do you have thoughts on that, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like the cowboy poetry thing, I think. You know, you got connected to the land, you get connected to the water, you get connected to the wildlife and to the life, and it's romantic, you know, it's poetic, you know, there's... I mean, it's all there, and then it might not be interesting to people who don't know of the life. You know, sometimes I wonder why people who don't know about fishing are really so excited about it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I do understand why the people who do do it know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it. People say, oh, wow, you got such beautiful poems and all that stuff. I could never do that. I say, man, I bet you think those things, you know, because we all do, you know, whether we speak it or not, you know, living this life. Like you were talking about the birds and everything. There's so many connections, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a fully immersive experience, you know. And there's the difference between work and day-to-day life when you're fishing is non-existent. And a lot of people don't have jobs where, like Mo said, you know, anything is possible on any given day. And when commercial fishing is good, it's the best thing on earth. And when it's bad, it's the worst thing on earth. And I think those peaks and valleys really allow for a lot of unique experiences that are really shareable. And I mean, we heard two of those right there from Steve and Mo.
Right.
Love and fear. It's all in there. Beauty and conflict.
And humiliation. I mean, I can't remember. I was just thinking about it recently because I'm struggling to step into kind of a new profession. And I just was actually longing for those days. I was talking about this day I got web in the wheel of a new, I was trying to learn how to drive this jet skiff, and it was supposed to be unweb in the wheelable, and I did it. I got a line in the wheel, which means motors cut, and then the boat just cut me loose, and I was floating around by myself, and they're all like pulling the net on board without me, and I was bawling. You know, I'm like 30 years old. I'm just straight up. Because there wasn't anybody going to hear me. You know, I was just crying as loud as I could. I was just trying to get it all out. I didn't know if I was going to come back to the boat and they're going to be like, right, you're fired. That's possible. It was horrible. And then and it was kind of a lumpy day. There was a little bit of weather, but it wasn't too bad. And you're just sort of hoping nobody else sees you out. Like any other boat's like, what's Mo doing out there by herself? You know, and bawling. And however, you know, fishing clothing is people. I knew people would just look out there and see that enormous skiff and assume that I was some man. So I was fairly disguised. But then all these, again, you know, this whole pod of humpback whales just started playing really, not super close because you don't want them that close, but they were just jumping up because it was a crappy day out and they like to play in the big waves, and they were just throwing themselves out of the water and landing and playing, and I was just looking at them feeling so terrible and crying, and just some part of me, I'm such a human, I was just like, they're trying to make me feel better. But the other day I was just having a rough day at work, and I was just thinking, man, I wish I could just have a day where I could just sit out in the skiff and bawl. Get it out. Get it over with.
That's Mo Bowster talking about one of her experiences. And she will be tonight at Salvage Works in Kenton. Mm-hmm. And that's at 6:30. Also here with us, Steve Schoonmaker, who will be there and sharing his poetry. And Perry, will you be there tonight?
I'm not going to make it tonight, but I'm headed out to Astoria tomorrow, and I'll be around Astoria all week and for the Fisher Poets.
Great. And we thought that we would share something recorded from your father, John Broderick, who we mentioned is one of the founders of the Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria. And what we have is Poetry in Motion. Is there anything that you know about that you could share with us?
This is one of the best that he's done. It's about Ole Olson, who's a legend, so I'll let the poem speak for itself.
Right.
Poetry in Motion. One morning just past sunrise, when the skiffs are anchored out and you've trudged up to the cabins through mud that's just about knee-deep, and you've peeled off your chest waders and you've hosed off your hip boots, and you think you'll sleep till midnight, then Ole passes, pooped. He's walking like a zombie in muddied, gurried clothes. Pancakes in 10 minutes, he says, and in the shack he goes. And when you show up shortly in your long john poly pro, Ole's got the batter on, he's making up weak joe like they like it in Montana, with their buckskins golden brown. He throws you a few on a paper plate and he tells you to sit down. You get some fish last night, he asks. We did okay, and you? All that net just boiled and we sit out. We got quite a few. And so you relive another opener before you go to sleep. And when you finish salmon, talk sometimes turns to sheep, 'cause Ole, he's a shearer in the winter down below, and While I do the dishes, I like it when you'll show me how they do it in Montana, 200 times a day. Poetry in motion is what he'll always say. Poetry in motion. And he holds his hands just so, and he crouches in his kitchen, and he has another go at another invisible sheep. I've seen him shear 100, and watched imaginary wool fall easy, and I've wondered at how it looks just like that bow wake that peels off of his boat when he's packing several thousand pounds, and the skiff will hardly float. And his hands, as big as flounders, move the smoothest salmon swim, and he lays that imaginary fleece before me all smooth and tight and trim. That's poetry in motion. Like Marco mending net, like picking fish at sunrise, and sometimes I regret that I've never seen a real sheep, ever shorn by Ole's hands, though I've seen him starting outboard, and I think I understand, because Ole starts his outboard by swearing at it first, kind of sweet and friendly, but presently it's worse. He primes her twice, he yanks her once, and she yanks him right back, and he lets go of the starter cord, but the next time it's all slack, and he barks his knee on the transom, and the recoil won't rewind, so he rips off the cowling, and he throws it back behind the buoys and the anchors, and he helps the cord back in. The spring will bite his finger, and then he'll pull the cord again, and again, and again, but she won't start just yet. Ole just keeps pulling, his brow beads up with sweat, then he mutters something vulgar, maybe fiddles with the choke, checks the gas line, shakes the cannon, wonders what he's broke. Poetry in motion, oh. I shuffle off to sleep, but when Ole starts his outboard, I'm sure glad I'm not a sheep.
And that was John Broderick in Poetry in Motion. Anything you want to tell us, Perry, about growing up with the poet, your father, the Fisher poet?
You know, Dad's a creative writing teacher, and so I think he instilled in us a real sense of importance around, you know, telling stories and capturing moments in writing. And I do play some music. I'm not much for a performer on stage, but, you know, I do appreciate music and reading and writing. And my brothers perform as well at the gathering. And, you know, he's been able to capture a lot of really good moments from my childhood and commercial fishing in some of his writing and storytelling that I really appreciate, and that poem is one of them. You know, I listen to that or I read that on my own, and I'm right there. I can picture exactly that moment, and luckily I'll get to relive it again this summer, and hopefully every summer after that. So I don't think Ole's coming out to the gathering this year, but his daughter Sarah Brond is coming out to Astoria, and she's
awesome.
Yeah, she's a great singer. She's performing Friday night at Fort George Event Center, I believe, or Fort George
Brewery,
yeah. And so she's worth a listen.
Just a little bit about the gathering. Yeah. It takes place in how many venues are there this year? There's
five or six
venues all over town, and there's lots of the Coast Weekend edition of the weekly paper out there, the Daily Astorian, publishes a schedule for the gathering, so there's just all over town, there's just heaps of newspaper maps and schedules and articles about what's going on, and everything kicks off on Friday at 5 p.m., and you can go to one of the venues and buy a button for $15 that gets you into all the events for the entire weekend. So that's Friday from 5 until... Well, there's going to be the 5th annual Fisher Poet Dance at Cala at the end of the night after 10 p.m. From 5 to 10. So there's poets performing 15-minute sets in those venues. And then all day Saturday, workshops, 4 o'clock, storytellers circle. And then starting at 5, Saturday night goes from 5 until it all ends at the event center with the poetry contest, which is a real hoot. The Astoria Event Center does stream and broadcast from the event center, so you can listen to it on KMUN if you aren't in town. And then Sunday morning, we all just get together and have something where everybody gets up and supposedly only does one piece for 5 minutes or less, but it just goes on and on, and people don't want to leave. It's really sweet. It's like any get-together. So that's... how that works. And I also wanted to say, like, I, in response to your last question about other trades that do poetry, There is a lumberjack poetry tradition. I did get to perform once in a national park with a lumberjack poet. I don't know if there's any more out there, but I did get to experience some of that. And then one of the inspirations, or maybe, you know, a big inspiration for the Fisher Poets Gathering is a Oregon Book Award winner named Clem Stark, who his book Journeyman's Wages, his first book of poetry, is won the Oregon Book Award in the late 90s. And he writes about his years as a merchant seaman, but also as a carpenter, as a journeyman carpenter. And he's got a real tradition of that. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, our culture at this time doesn't really support poets, I think poets tend to try and find work where they can. So there's a lot of biologists that write poetry and farmers. I think there's a lot of farmer poetry out there. I mean, Wendell Berry is a great example of that. And I can't remember the guy in Astoria. He emceed a few years. He's got that great poem about a shovel.
So he was part of the Fisher Poets Gathering too.
He emceed one year, many years ago at this point. God, I can't believe it's been going on. This will be the 19th year.
And we are, as if you just tuned in, we are talking about the Fisher Poets Gathering and the event tonight at Salvage Works, which features seven Alaskan poets.
It's actually nine. A couple people jumped on at the last minute, so great. I'm just going to read the list if you don't mind. Sure. We have Tella Odson, who's got a book coming out. She's a prose writer. She fishes a troller in Juneau and lives in Bellingham with her partner, Joel Brady Power, and he's a poet. He'll be performing tonight. Harlan Bailey, prose writer, very dry, awesome. He's in his, I think it's early 70s. Fishes Bristol Bay, and Ron McDaniel, who is not he did fish with you guys.
Yeah, he fished.
He's a cowboy from Arkansas, and he's a salesman. So just like the Fisher Poets, he has to support his cowboy habit by getting a job, and then he cowboys a couple months out of the year in the spring and the fall in Arkansas, and it's kind of like everybody's our relation. He's sort of my Arkansas brother. It's funny. I met him at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada, the only time he ever went. And then he's been coming to the Fisher Poets ever since. Laura Messersmith-Glavin is putting the event on with me, and we met in Kodiak in 1992. She grew up on fishing for her dad on a boat. And then she teaches here at PCC. Steve Schoonmaker, who's sitting right here with us, and Toby Sullivan, who flies in from Kodiak tonight. He's a journalist and spent his young years crab fishing during the bad old days before there were survival suits, and just crazy times, lots of death and great stories. He writes kind of the long form prose. He's a beautiful writer. And then Aaron Freistad, who fished for many years in Southeast Alaska in all kinds of. She was a deckhand like me. I met her the first year, and she told me years later, she was introducing me at Fisher Poets when we were co-emceeing together. And she tells a story I'd never heard, that the morning she met me, she read a horoscope that said, "You're going to meet your soulmate today." And when we met at Fisher Poets, I got on the microphone and I asked everybody, I was like, "Oh, I need a ride back to Portland. Does anybody take me? I got a bike, so it needs to be a big car." And she came, she just swaggered right up and she's like, "I have a van." She had a van and she had a husky that had gone fishing with her for 5 or 6 years. Her dog went out fishing with her, Blanca. And we talked for like the next 10 hours, and we've been talking ever since. And so she'll be with us. Beautiful poet. She's got a new book coming out, a chat book that's being published, and it's called The Glass Jar. And she writes prose and poetry, but always says she does not sing. And she, her stuff is so good, so hard. You know, she just looks right at the heart of all this. Everybody does, but, you know, some people highlight kind of the lighthearted stuff, and Steve tends to go real deep and spiritual, and Aaron, you know, it's different. You know, like when you're like, "I'm broke, I need to go fishing." She got a job out on the coast cooking for the crab boats in the wintertime, and man, you know, people's stories. She, you know, you're out there and you don't know, like, there's felons working right next to you, and that's all right. You know, everybody needs to have a job and stuff, but you're working with people that have made some hard decisions, and they, and then they, you know, she, I remember her telling me, she said, I trusted those two men with my life more than I've ever trusted anyone, but I would not probably walk down the street with them on a Saturday night if they'd been drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like people just out on the edge working. Mm-hmm. And making money, and some of those stories are in her book, The Glass Jar. She talks about that. That metaphor is about, you know, you just keep all your emotions and the and stuff bottled up inside of you, and then there's a moment when that you share, and you take the lid off the glass jar, and you just, everybody kind of lets it out. That's a little bit what, like, Fisher Poets Gathering is, letting that glass jar out.
So, Steve, did you have another poem that you wanted to share with us live, or would we go to one?
Yeah, sure, I could. yeah, I got one here. Similar theme. It's called Watercourse Way. From where I am in this world, there's a small harbor town with a pulse of vitality as the ocean and the sound and the streams of the uplands. Yeah. In the constants of rain and fishing fleet muscle with acute growing pains, maintaining those harvests the loans have to claim with the salmon know not, but in anadromous ways, ancient as rains down our watercourse ways. From where I am in this world, I face a rare place, a sea and a land of wild beauties embraced, entangled in conflicts and surviving resolves, extending life forward as the planet revolves with the cogs and the wheels of technology's race, pushing the boundaries of wide open space, in the glare of our headlights at a speed limit's pace, down the lines and the curves and the age of my face, down the foam and the curls and the waves of my wakes, down those watercourse ways that know no mistakes, only clouds, rains, and trickles to the rivers and the lakes, only flow and let go of what's time and what's place. From where I am in this world, in the corner still wild, caught with such forces, with a heart like a child, to spill with conditions or shine like the bay, riding high on such beauty, but in conflict each day, where the being is salty and stressful and loud, and the catching is brutal and grateful and proud, and each of us caught in the pull of our pay that'll run through our hands like the rain and the spray, season by season, come what may, come what may, season by season, that watercourse way. From where I am in this world, feeding more than my needs, where the catch in my net is what others will eat. Oh, there's so many others that know not of the sea, or of anadromous ways, or of wild ocean's needs, where habitat losses may continue to lead in directions away from sustainable Steve. From where I am in this world, as I hold in my grip all the lines and the nets and the gills of the fish, I claim as a living. Yes, I claim as my own from where I am in this world, simply flesh, blood, and bone. From where I am in this world, just one simple man with a boat and a net by a sea and a land, a sea so achieving by a land so alive, a future uncertain by a past known to thrive, still easily claimed with anadromous ways, ancient as rains down our watercourse ways. From where I am in this world, down the lows, up the highs, where the Gulf of Alaska has rewarded our tries with the flesh of our fisheries in which we rely, flesh innate and instinctual as all humankind. However domestic our perceptions align, disguised or unconscious, what keeps us alive? You know, alive is not separate where the sun lights the day. It's all held in the flows of the lands as they lay at the confluence of beauty and conflict each day, where the being is salty and stressful and loud, the catching is brutal and grateful and proud.
Woo! Thank you. And that touches on some of the issues in our last few minutes of this show. I wanted to get into that Mo had mentioned to me earlier. Some of the, this is political perspectives, I guess these would be the more political issues surrounding fishing these days. But talk about, are those kind of things talked about at the gathering, or do they, or is it mostly?
Yeah, on the Saturday, there's usually a panel or a workshop or some kind of, there's usually, you know, songwriting and song singing and know, poetry workshops and stuff, but there's frequently I remember one year there was a big conversation about ocean acidification and a lot of consciousness raising around farmed fish. The Pebble Mine was a big topic a few years in a row, making sure that people were educated about the stuff going on around, they, you know, trying to put in a pebble mine at basically the birth of the spawning grounds up in Bristol Bay. So, yeah.
What are the issues that are on your mind at this time?
A big one for me, since I primarily, my years of fishing, I primarily fish salmon, is farmed fish, especially farmed salmon. Wild salmon are, when we eat wild salmon out here on the Pacific Northwest, we're eating Pacific salmon. We're eating one of the five species that fish here, and we're supporting local fishermen and even fishermen up in Alaska who catch them. When you're eating farmed fish or eating an Atlantic salmon, it's a different product. It's a genetically polluting product. If they get loose from their pens, they can pollute the salmon population. They're not native to these waters. They frequently are full of dye. I think they're changing that, but recently regulations permitted them to be labeled organic, which people have been sort of trained. They're being branded organic, and I think people assume that that's wild. They wouldn't let the wild salmon have the brand organic because we can't know what the wild salmon eat. So, but a farmed salmon, you know, when you're feeding it its little kibbles every day, you know what's in there. And if it's organic feed, then you can call it an organic fish. So I just think it's important for people to know that anything that's labeled organic salmon is from a farm. And I personally don't think you should pay money for it.
Hmm. Does that relate to, Perry, to your work? You work with Ocean Outcomes.
Yeah, so I work for a seafood consultancy here, and we are a fishery improvement organization, and basically we help commercial fisheries navigate the complexities of the global marketplace, and we provide the foundational science for other organizations working in sustainable seafood. And to bring that back to the fisher poets, you know, I think a pretty good framework exists in the larger Pacific Northwest that allows the commercial fishing lifestyle to thrive, and we see that, you know, more or less thrive. There's external factors, farm salmon being one of them, that has its effects, but we see that thriving lifestyle at the fisher poets, you know, which I think is, it's not a politically backed gathering. It's more a group of people who have something good going as far as their lifestyle, and they get together and they share that. People from all backgrounds and all ideologies.
And wasn't that a conscious decision that the organizers, including your dad, made that decision at some point? Somebody stepped forward and said, oh, what about corporate sponsorship? And they deliberately kept it small. I mean, if you go to the Cowboy Poetry Gathering or the Mystic Sea Music Festival, which I will be performing at this June out in Connecticut, I mean, to go to Mystic, I think it's $70. So it's to get $15 to get your button to get into 2.5 days of events, including a whole day of workshop and free admission to the Columbia River Maritime Museum. Big deal. So that was a conscious decision on those guys' part.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
And how about the issue that you brought up to me, Mo, blaming fishermen for what the decline in the
That's something you've probably heard that too, Steve and Perry. I mean, it's like when I would hang out in the cities, I did a lot of organizing, really grassroots kind of anarchist info shop style organizing, and there was a go-to like Greenpeace sort of blaming the fishermen and blaming indigenous fishermen for overfishing and the decrease in salmon or other fish populations, when that's, it's a much more complex picture than that. It's really easy to look at a person in a room and be like, oh, you're a fisherman, you're the reason there's not fish. You should be a vegetarian and not fish. You're destroying the population and the, you know. Did you have a?
Oh yeah, I agree. It seems like as a matter of fact, my poem I have on this new CD ban. It's easy to blame everybody, but or pick out somebody. But, you know, the thing about salmon, the, one of the most important things I got to remember is that they need a lot of watershed. They need a lot of uplands. They need a lot of habitat. That's something we all have a part in. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get a fish from the ocean, it's not just from the ocean. So the tire track runoffs, all the effects of everybody.
Farming.
Know?
Right. And we're going to have to leave it right there. Steve Schoonmaker, I want to thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Very great to hear your work. And you. Also, Mo Baustern, wonderful to hear you today and to speak with you, Perry Broderick, and about your family and your current work. Thank you so much for coming in. Again, that's tonight at 6:30 at the Salvage Works.
2024 North Argyle.
Where you can hear more from Fisher Poets or this weekend at the Fisher Poets Gathering. If Judy, if you want to pick some music, or we don't really have a music thing to go out with.
Poem. What? Why not? Yeah, she can go out with a poem or something.
That's okay, just party. Whatever. It's your choice, Judy, for serenading us out. Thank you, Judy.
Scales in oh, she's going to hair, do. Slime on my clothes. Smell of fish follows wherever I go. My friends told me as how to get rich quick. All I'm getting so far is seasick. Here I am out on the herring grounds searching for silver.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival hosted by the Northwest Film Center. 97 feature films and 62 short films from all over the world will be playing through February 27th, all over Portland. There are also special focus programs, including Global Classroom, a Made in Oregon shorts program, PIFF After Dark, again. That's the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival screening films at multiple locations throughout Portland until February 27th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.